Welcome to the Women in Business radio show with Sian Murphy, connecting women in business around the globe.
Hey, welcome to the Women in Business radio show. I'm laughing because we never managed to actually get live. It doesn't matter where we are, whether we're here or in the studio. It always seems like a massive shock that we've actually managed it. And I end up not knowing what to say. But hey ho, it is what it is. We wouldn't want to over prepare, would we? So what are we talking about today, and who have we got in the studio? We are talking about startup stories and the importance of communities. And joining us to help us around that is Adele Martin. I'm going to ask you, Adele, you do know you're on mute, don't you? Unmute yourself. It's not going to work because we won't be able to hear you. So as you might have gathered, we are not in our usual studio. We are still in our Zoom studio. So if you can hear people coming in and out, roadworks outside, dogs barking, cats meowing, kids yelling, lost connections, poor sound, that's because we are all subject to the vagaries of our own home studios and internet connections. So in the studio with us today, we have Adele Martin, who is the founder of the Women in Business Midlife Club. She is talking about her startup story with communities from the point of view of starting up a community around her business. So does that make sense? Starting up a business around starting a community. Yes. We also have in the studio with us today Susan Cabani, who is the founder and CEO of Eugenie, which is a dedicated private platform for online communities and memberships. So we're going to be talking to Susan from the angle of actually starting her business to provide a platform for people who want to run and manage and create those communities. So welcome both of our lovely guests.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And we can hear everybody. Rock on. Also in the studio, we have the lovely Laura Lawrence from Laura Lawrence Marketing. Hello, Laura.
Good morning, Sian. Always a pleasure to be here on a Thursday. I'm raring to go. I'm feeling really energetic today, so looking forward to it all.
That's what we like to hear. Brilliant. Also in the studio, we have Jackie Grailsall from 1230, the Women's, well, not from 1230, the Women's Company, the founder of 1230, the Women's Company.
Good morning, Sian and everybody. Lovely to see the special guests. I'm eager to find out more. Adele, I know a little of, but Susan, nothing other than the sheet, so I'm really raring to go and find out more.
Yes, because Jackie also, I ought to mention, Jackie runs a community of women, which has up until now been largely focused in the UK around lunchtime events. And you know, sometimes I wonder just how thick I am. Do you know, it took me about 3 years before I realised that 1230, the Women's Company, was actually the time that they met for lunch.
You're not alone.
Late than never.
And even now, sometimes I'll send her a message and I go, are you available? But no, I'm just starting a meeting because it's 1230. And okay.
Don't forget our Spanish connection though, because that's 9 years going. We've been doing that.
And that's with Costa Women as well. Sometimes I wonder how I managed to get this far, if we could call it far. I really do. But never mind. Okay, here we go. So I think we'll do a couple of announcements first, because we do have some really exciting events coming up for Women in Business. So hot on the trail of our very first online conference for the Women in Business Big Show, of which Adele was one of our, I'm going to call her a brave speaker, not because she needs to be brave to speak, but because she was brave enough to speak with me, for me, on a brand new platform when I had no idea what I was doing. Because this is not the same as Zoom. It was exciting. It was also harrowing. I had some lovely, lovely comments from people. And the lovely comments were saying, oh, it was so well organised. It all went so smoothly. I'm here to tell you, it was not smooth and organised where we were, because we were running this from our home offices. We have two offices here, and we have a spiral wooden staircase in between the two offices. And I'm surprised both of us are still okay and haven't killed ourselves, because we were running up and down those stairs, pressing buttons, poking things, plugging in different internet connections and helping our speakers get on board into the speaking platform. It was interesting, wasn't it, Adele?
It was. And Sian, I will say this in front of everybody, you did an amazing job, because I was backstage with you and the tech took a bit, but you did a brilliant job to keep us all on time. So credit where credit is due.
Thank you. I was also, what people couldn't see was playing around with the timings of the platform in behind the scenes, and I had no idea whether the whole thing would actually collapse as I was moving the times of the speakers around, because we did have a couple of issues with speakers showing slides and sharing screens. But do you know, that's what happens, and I think that's what we have to be prepared for. And what was amazing for me, and this is really for anybody else who's out there who's thinking of perhaps taking it on to a stage that's a little bit more complicated than Zoom or something that we've done before, was really how supportive speakers were, you know, especially Adele. Everything did not go to plan, but nobody was fazed, which was really what was good. You know, I had picked speakers who I knew would be able to carry on regardless of what happened. And that was sort of, you know, what happened. We just had to go for it. We couldn't plan for everything. There was absolutely no way that we could plan for every single eventuality. It didn't matter what we did. And it's like that in normal events, isn't it? It's like that on radio shows. It's like that when we run events. I guarantee stuff is not going to go 100% to plan. And
yeah, what was... but we're women, Sian. We're flexible. We don't have to manage it.
Yeah, I know. Funnily enough, not everybody was really happy about doing it, about being an exhibitor. There were a few people who were really, really reluctant. I had to say, just give it a go. You've got really nothing to lose. Just go on there and give it a go. And everybody really, really enjoyed it. So we're doing that again on April the 9th. And at the moment, the only place where you can see these events, I'm afraid, is on my personal website, which is sianmurphy.com. That's SianMurphy.com. If you go there, there is an events calendar. They are all on there. We also have International Women in Business, which is collaboration, support, inspiration. We've got two fantastic speakers. The next event is coming up on the 26th of March. There are networking opportunities. You can listen to the speakers. Jackie, can you give us a little bit about the speakers? Are you able to do that very quickly now?
Oh, with our collaboration, yeah.
Yeah.
We've got Nicole Johnston, who is going to help people get their book finished, writing that. She's an extremely experienced writer, fiction, as well as factual stuff. And we've got Carol Pike, who is going to take us through our branding. I was going to say mood, it's not mood. Vision board. Yeah, personal branding vision board, which she is about the importance of your branding and marketing, etc. And you'll have a lot of fun with both of them, as well as obviously the importance of the experience and professionalism that they both have.
And I thought, you know, when I knew that Carol did branding and I know about vision boards, but I've never actually seen them put together. And that was an approach that I think is lovely. I just really, yeah, I just really,
she has.
Oh, not again. Let's just carry on.
Carry on regardless.
I know. And this is what happens. Okay, I'm not even on my own internet connection. I'm on a dongle. You'd think I'd be okay, wouldn't you? But never mind.
You always sound rude, that.
That's why I got it. I've got to get a dongle. Okay. So the concept, I just love the concept of bringing together branding and vision boards, which means that it doesn't matter how big or small your business is, this is something that you can do at home yourself. You can work through it, and we're going to be helping people beforehand, gathering the materials that they need so that they can actually do this if they want to as we're moving along. Okay, folks, I think I need to stop talking because my connection appears to be once again unstable. And let us go over and talk to, I'll tell you what, we're going to start off with Adele to tell us about starting up her business community. So Adele, you know, why did you decide that a community was the way for you to go? and how did you make a decision that you needed to put some structure around it? And then what we're going to do is go over and talk to Susan about her involvement in creating that structure, that platform for you to build your community on. So, Adele.
Okay, so why? The interesting point is, as I've stepped out of 31 years of being in a big corporate community and went into being a woman in business, I hadn't really thought about what that loss would be. So as I started to sort of network and talk to other women, and at the time I was in mixed networks, I found that actually, how could I, you know, connect with these women? And these women were asking me, they were of my age, Sean, and I was taking the whole hormonal conversation there. And I found that actually I couldn't find the women I wanted to connect with, but yet they were coming to me. So I quickly realised, actually, Adele, I need to build a community. I need to build that community to share my message and actually show other women in business there is a place where we can have a conversation. So it hit me after probably 2 weeks of networking and talking to women saying, you know, to really make a difference is to be a community. So that's when I realised, and I actually stopped for a couple of weeks and reworked my business plan with that in mind, and then created like a club. Then I decided, okay, so I've got something to say. I know who I'm going to say it to. How, what system and platform am I going to do it? Because you have to be careful, Sean, because I could have got caught up with the passion of wanting to help everybody and working 100-hour week. Yeah, that's not good. And I wouldn't be walking my talk. So I sat back and I thought, right, I need a systems and a process. I sort of started a little bit on a Facebook group because that's all I had with a very small community. And then I realised there were two things. First of all, I wanted a break from Facebook to have a personal development group. I didn't want to go on Facebook because as strong as I am, I couldn't find a way of switching off the notifications. And secondly, I was a bit worried about where my content was. So then I thought I need a structure. And then literally I met Susan at the same time I was thinking about it. And Susan introduced Eugenie, and it was literally within a week. I had the biggest aha moment. And again, I decided I've got a community. I've now got a platform. And more importantly, Susan got the problem I was trying to fix. So that is literally how it happened.
Okay, so you built you had your community first, and then you thought, okay, how am I actually going to, what am I going to do? How am I going to connect, communicate with the people in my community? But it's also about the cross communication, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and because these were women in business as well, they were also helping each other. So yeah. We were creating this peer group and be able to share and support each other, both in, you know, if somebody was having a not a great day, then they could support each other. But then also we've got accountants helping each other. So it really became a self-fulfilling network where actually I'd not step out of it. But I've got some really good champions and they're helping to do that. And do you know what? I can honestly say here, it's far exceeded my expectations. I'm really pleased. Still got a long way to go to build a community, but it's thriving better than I first thought.
I mean, I think we for me, sort of looking at and building a community is we need to be very careful, and I'm not lecturing here, but it's something I'm very good at doing is lecturing, actually. And so if what I'm doing is just talking to a group of people, that's lecturing, isn't it? It becomes the community when the people that you are lecturing to actually start talking to themselves. So you, as the person who has built the community, sort of has to, you're still there, you're leading, you're in control, but you're stepping back and not only letting other people have those conversations, but providing a place where they can have those conversations and perhaps setting the rules. So it could be Chatham House rules that, you know, whatever said in this room stays in this room. It could be about negativity. It could be about the type of support that's being offered. But you're setting the rules and then letting people do it, aren't you? Letting people sort of interact in that community. And I think that's what really matters. And that's the challenge. I think all of us could come up with, certainly now in what we've got with Zoom, I think all of us could come up with a place where you stand there and talk and teach to a group of people and then they all toddle off. But that's not what a community is it?
No, it's absolutely not. You start the conversation, you watch, and then you let them grow, and then you're able to dip in and dip out, and then you bring rich and more detailed content. And also, I ask them, Sian, what they want help with. What do they want me to go off and find and research? What experts do they want? What help do they want? So I ask them the questions.
So I think before we go over to Susan and some of the we're going to talk later about some of the different ways that you can manage your community, how to, you know, some of the things that you can put in place, how you can make it work, some of the challenges around it. You know, we have Facebook groups, we have LinkedIn groups. Why didn't you do that on Facebook and LinkedIn? Because they're all there. There are massive, massive community groups on Facebook, aren't there? They're huge. Why not? Why not there?
There were two. The first one that worried me the most was the content. So the content that I was sharing, that if that platform went down, and there were some groups were getting like told off in Facebook land and having their community put on hold. That would mean I wouldn't get access to my materials that I own. So that really, really worried me. And also, I was fighting against algorithms in a Facebook group, which I didn't really want to. I wanted it to be natural. I wanted people to interact. And I didn't want to have the worry of where my content was stored and how I was going to beat Facebook every day. It was too exhausting. And then on LinkedIn, it's for me at the moment, there is a small menopause group. It doesn't get the traction. It hasn't got the identity of being a group on LinkedIn. And that just didn't fly at all. It just didn't work. And so for me, and then the third thing was women wanted to go somewhere for themselves without any distraction and have a conversation. So when they told me, I said, look, I'm thinking about, I didn't do it. I said to them, I found a platform. This is what I'm thinking of. What do you think? And they went, yeah, why not? And then I showed them. They and my founding members helped me build it, and then I took them into beta test. So they were part of that journey. I didn't tell them I was going. I got them involved, Sian, in moving from Facebook, and now they love it. And now, not only do they love it, when we want things or I ask them for their feedback, I feed it to Susan. So they're involved in the next iteration, or Susan had asked me to test something and I asked them. They like that. They like to be involved.
So it's helping. It's a pathway here, isn't it, of feedback, sort of, yeah, going up and down the chain, yeah, from the people who are in the group and part of the community, for you, Adele, who's building the community and using the platform, and then through to Susan, who's actually creating that platform. Mm-hmm. I think one of the other things is, it's, you know, Facebook and LinkedIn act as sort of the outside moderators, aren't they? They, yeah, sort of they can police what is said and what happens and what's going on in a group necessarily. I mean, we've seen things about groups being taken down.
Absolutely.
Because the content may be that the content is actually damaging to the wider community, but also it could be that it's misinterpreted, that what's being spoken about is misinterpreted. And that you're then in a situation of having to try and explain what it is you're actually talking about. Well, you know, do we want to do that? Me personally, no. Jackie?
I think Adele's hit on a very important thing as well. And the fact that your stuff on Facebook isn't yours. Facebook owns it and they can do what they want with it, as has been highlighted about taking it down, etc. So it's, you know, you're on a borrowed area, you're on a borrowed platform. It isn't yours. And I think what Adele was saying is absolutely crucial, to have that ownership and protection of your own people.
Yes, yeah, and that's the thing, is you can set the rules. Adele, do you still have a Facebook group?
No, I don't.
You don't have anything?
No, and again, So, for instance, I'm running a live workshop on the 15th, and it would be too easy to say, I'll run that through Facebook. But because of the tech, and I had a discussion with Susan, and we said, right, we can section part of it off. So there's four tiers of payment. So that's sectioned off. I am bringing the live workshop in as my guest, and we're going to run it on that platform as my guest. So I don't need that Facebook group. I can run them on that platform.
I wasn't sure whether you perhaps had a Facebook group still as a visible presence on Facebook as a way of maybe connecting with people, marketing basically. So not to run your platform, but to promote your platform.
No, I don't. I don't because I have my Facebook page. And if, so for instance, because I run the live workshop sort of every 8 weeks, if they want to connect and communicate in a safe space, I bring them in early. So in some ways, it's sort of a hybrid Facebook group that they're in there, they're already part of that, so I can market to them and get them in. But I do not have a separate Facebook
group. I suppose thinking about it now, it's just another place to manage, isn't it? It's another community that needs managing.
Yeah.
And you know, if you get them in there, can't just say, okay, actually, well, this is a dud. Don't worry about this. Nothing's happening here. What you need to do is go over there. It's just confusing to people, isn't it? And if you don't keep that interaction up, if you don't manage it as a community, people are going to misunderstand what's happening in the real community.
Yeah. And also you have to be careful because this is where you have to look at your data. So you might say, oh, I've got 1,000 people in my group. But how many of them are true active engagers, yeah? Because I know, but I don't do this anymore. I was in groups participating. So I was somebody's number, but not actually in there. So, Sean, when I did have my free group at the start, because I fell in that trap, I was looking and there was only a handful of people engaged. So we do need to be careful. So if you are a Facebook group owner, just think about who's in there and who is actually engaging with you, because you might get caught up with, I've got 1,000 people, but actually 4 are only engaging. Yeah. So you have to be careful.
Academy was very much like that. If any of you remember Academy, they had millions of people on their database, but actually millions of them weren't doing anything.
There's only 2. Okay, let's introduce Susan. Susan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
So Susan has founded, she's the CEO and founder of, is it Eugenie or Eugenie?
It's Eugenie,
which is basically the platform. It's a private platform that Adele, what do we call it? hosts and manages her community. So Susan, tell us a little bit about your story. You know, where you came from, and how Eugenie was born.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's going to sound really first world, and actually our first version of Eugenie was very different than what it's evolved into today. And I think that's all, you know, as Adele was hitting upon, talking to our prospective people who wanted to use the platform, getting a lot of feedback. You know, we didn't fall into the trap. I mean, this is a whole nother conversation. I'm a female founder. I haven't raised a lot of money. I've done it very agile, trying to build a product people actually want. But when I go back to version one, my husband and I got married. We had some newlywed woes. I am the CEO of our marriage as well. And I said to him, I'm like, I need you to do these 3 things in the house, right? So you need to take out the trash or the rubbish. I am American, if you can't tell. I need you to buy the milk. He actually drinks quite a lot of milk, a 40-year-old man that drinks a lot of milk. But and you need to drop off and pick up dry cleaning, because the majority of it's his anyway. He, you know, he's a banker in the city, so it's his whole wardrobe. This is, again, me just being an American in the UK. I'm like, I can't just jump in the car and go drop it off, right? I have to walk to the local. There just isn't the space. It's a very different lifestyle. So I said to him, you need to take care of these three things. Now, of course, week upon week, we're fighting about, babe, where's my suit? Oh, I need that shirt for a meeting. I'm like, well, you haven't picked up your dry cleaning and I'm not going to do it for you. So, you know, it's one of those things I just stuck my heels in. But we actually both come from a very strong social and religious community. I moved over to the UK in 2009. He and I actually have met through our religious community. So we have a very big global tight-knit community. I came here. It's very easy for me just to go to the community center, meet people and really integrate into my life here. So a very big advocate of community. I saw a neighbor walking home with his dry cleaning and I thought, I wonder if we could create an app that would allow neighbors to share tasks. So one person can drop off, the other person can, you know, pick up or whatever that might be. And then I started thinking about the other things that we could share, carpooling, resources, how could we use community to actually have a benefit for the group, the person, and then ultimately also the planet. So we decided, I'm a lawyer background, so no technical ability whatsoever, decided that him as a banker, me as a lawyer, we're going to build this app. So we went out, we found the talent in London, you know, it wasn't going to be us coding it. We definitely thought about it for a second, should I learn how to code? And he very smartly said, no, you should do what you're good at, find someone else who is the tech talent. So we found a company, we built a prototype where, when I mean prototype, it didn't work. It was just like the front end that you could show people and have people to give you feedback. So I then used Facebook. You might think that I don't like Facebook. I like it for what it's worth. I just think that we have to use it effectively as part of our arsenal. So I used Facebook, used my community on Facebook, my followers, and said, what would kind of things would you guys share? Who would you share with? And the biggest feedback we got, which shouldn't have been a surprise, is, Susan, we love the idea, right? It saves us time, it saves us money, it strengthens the community, but not going to do it with my neighbor. I don't like my neighbor. I chose the house, not the neighbor. And I don't even know if I trust them with my dry cleaning. So we started saying, okay, well then which communities would you trust, right? Who would you want to share with? Where would the pocket be? And a lot of people started mentioning things like their church or the nursery even, right? Not lots of moms have connections with other moms at their nurseries. But they're, you know, there was a lot of different organic communities that we then started looking at. And we then took the next step to talk to the community leaders of these groups to say, well, what are your challenges, right? Where are your communities hosted? How are you staying connected? Because another thing that was going on in the background is both my husband and I kind of grew up in our community center. We spent a lot of time there, but we don't see the next generation doing the same thing. We see a lot of them, you know, going and doing other things, whether it's digital technology, whether it's, I just sound much older than I am, but you know, we spent a lot of time there, not online. So we thought maybe there's a challenge for these or community owners. Maybe they just don't have good tech and they can't keep up with time. And we found that that was true. They said either they didn't want to use social media platforms because of privacy concerns, right? Not all churches and mosques and things are going to put their schedules on Facebook. Nurseries, parents don't necessarily want to put their children's information on Facebook as well. So there's a lot of reasons from a privacy perspective where people were using things like newsletters or notice boards, but there was a challenge. And I think the other side of it was a non-technical ability. I mean, in the UK, we still have a big skills gap as well. So a lot of people are scared of tech. They don't know how to tackle it. They don't know how to set anything up that isn't just setting up a Facebook group. I think that's why we all default to these things, because we know how to use them. Yeah. So we pivoted. We said, okay, we're not just a task sharing app. We actually need to come up with a better solution for communities that is private, can be curated, because sometimes also, you know, you use Slack or Facebook or WhatsApp, you can't really create the right space for your specific community. So we knew it needed to be curated. And here, you know, we talk about kind of sending one-way information. You still need your leaders to have a space to share what brings the community together. So dates, you know, resources, that sort of thing. The peer-to-peer stuff comes, and we can talk all about how that's the holy grail, but takes time. You know, you still need that. So just putting our business hat on as well, we're like, okay, well, really, if we're going to use the influencer model and the community leaders being the influencers, we need to give them a better way to connect with their community. And so we shifted to that. We did it initially in the early days. We did an alpha test with social communities. We were going to try to make Eugenie free. But then we thought, actually, we're going to run into the same problems of the big data companies, right? They're going to treat their people as data versus. So we decided we had to charge for it. It had to be affordable, but there had to be a fee for it. And so today we are serving, we're working with lots of different business organizations, actually working with a lot of charities as well, because I do really want to give back. So we do a lot of giving back to charities and social organizations. But today we're a B2B. We have clients like Adele who use Facebook as a marketing tool and then host everything on Eugenie. We have other people who do, Sean, as you said, use it as Facebook as a funnel. But it can just be another place you have to manage. And you know, with Facebook using inactivity against you in terms of your Facebook algorithm. It's just, there's a lot of changes going on. So a lot of people will say to me, Susan, you must hate Facebook or you must hate these platforms. And I don't, I'm a big user of all of them. We have to understand what they're meant to do and use them accordingly. And I think that's changed a lot over the last few years.
Can I just ask some questions? Just a few things that occurred to me just as both of you were talking, is that sometimes we may think of a community as around a community center, around a church, around a place where people have traditionally gone and done mm-hmm. something together. But that actually a community very often is, it's not about a building or a place where people meet. And I think perhaps that's become quite obvious as COVID has moved on. And it's about people who are sharing perhaps the same problem, who have the same mindset, who are thinking in the same way, or are looking for people who aren't thinking in the same way, who are looking for perhaps a little bit of adaptation. So do you think that community now is moving from being a place where people go and meet to something a little bit more ethereal, up in the cloud and in our heads? Basically, it's not our neighbour, it's not necessarily the person in our church, it's the person that we can connect with our brains.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, sometimes this is a challenge we've had, right? Talking about community, and people then get confused because we're a business platform. For a lot of our communities are business networks or people who are running communities like Adele, right? It's not based on location. It's based on values and the types of other people you want to be surrounding yourselves with. So 100%, I think the word community is completely, it's different for lots of different people. We don't need a physical space anymore with technology. I mean, community, online community started with forums, right? Back like 10, 15 years ago, you could have a forum and people around the world could talk about the same problem. And so, yeah, I think it's really significantly changed. And like you hit the nail. I mean, when we talked about community, people said it's not location-based, right? It's about other people we trust with, and we've made these relationships for so many different reasons. So, you know, even just, you know, we met, Adele and I met because we are in the Athena Network, and that's a community in itself. And it's just because we are all women business owners who want to talk to other women business owners. So yeah, it's very different today, I think.
So some of the challenges that are likely to happen for anybody who's sort of thinking, do you know, I think I might actually have a community. It took me quite a while to realize that I had a community, as it happens. And that may sound a little bit daft, but it did, because I hadn't set out to create a community. And suddenly I realized, actually, I have got a community. But some of the challenges around actually creating that cohesiveness and getting that community to interact with each other. So if we look at taking perhaps a community, an existing community, and it could be people that are meeting only in a physical environment. It could be people that are already in a Facebook group or a meeting in some other sort of way, and moving those onto a specific online platform versus saying, actually, I've got a really good idea. I've got a really good idea and I'm going to start a community, and this is where I'm going to start it. Wherever this is, be it, you know, on Facebook, be it on LinkedIn, or being it on Eugenie or other platforms. What about those two different approaches or aspects of it? What are your thoughts on that?
So there are challenges with both, right? When you're starting a brand new community, wherever you host it, I mean, I think a lot of times, sometimes it's easier to launch a brand new community wherever you want to host it because you're not moving people. There, you know, there's no behavior issue. There's no, you know, and you can do a real good in-depth look at who the ideal quote unquote client is, right? Where does that community member want to interact? Are they all comfortable on Facebook? Do they want to be on WhatsApp, right? So you take a look at where they might be most comfortable whilst also looking at what's going to happen as your community starts to get bigger and scale, because you're going to have different challenges at some stage. So, you know, when I start talking to community owners that want to start a new community, it's about looking at both what we need to do right now, but also what their vision is for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And I always think there's a combination of things that needs to happen, because we're never going to have a one size fits all solution. I think the biggest thing is you want to have control of your data in some way, right? Whether you end up using Eugenie or not, you want to have an email distribution. You want to have some way that if your community, if you're using social media, if your community, something happens to it, you have a way to connect with your members. So I think the challenges with that is that building a community in the noise today can also be difficult. It becomes a marketing, feat, really, when you're trying to market and cut through the noise and build that community. And, you know, the question I always get is, how many people do I need to launch a community? Like, do I need 10? Do I need 100? Do I need 1,000? I mean, the interesting thing that I think that's going on with a lot of community research at the moment is that small communities are just as effective as big communities. And I think we just get caught up in, oh, my community, they need this many people for it to be effective. It doesn't. On the flip side of transitioning people, I've kind of already mentioned it, is that it is difficult to move people, right? People are happy in one platform. They know how to use it. Sometimes it's just that fear of something new. With Facebook in specific, I think people join lots and lots of groups and don't participate in most of them, right? So it's easy to get 1,000 people. Well, not so much anymore, but in a group, because they're already on a platform. It's just a click of a button. Whereas bringing them to something like Eugenie or one of our competitors, there's a couple more steps involved. So I think it's just about looking at, you know, what the person wants. And I've had people who have tried to take their communities off of a social media platform and gone back because haven't been able to work. And I think one big reason is the fear of shutting down the social media group, right? Running both of them, because they're so afraid people will leave that they won't shut down the Facebook group and will try to run the Eugenie group at the same time. And you're essentially splitting your community into two different fractions. You're having to manage both. So I think there needs to be a transition period, but it's really difficult to run both if they're both trying to do the same thing.
It's funny what you said, Adele. I know you're going to say something. This is something that I asked because I am considering taking my small community of exhibitors off Facebook and into Eugenie. And when I was talking to some of my exhibitors, we were having a meeting and I said, look, this is what I want to do, but I'm a bit concerned that people won't make that move. And these guys who are not techie just said, well, that's the rule, isn't it? If they want to exhibit, they join the community. We know you won't make it that difficult. That's the rule. Just actually, yes, that's the rule. That may sound really hard, and that may take a lot more guts to do than to actually say. But perhaps part of this is about actually deciding and making it easy, you know, making it as smooth as possible for people to make that transition, making sure that you see it from their point of view and not from your own point of view. Because when you create the community and you create the platform, you set it all up, it's easy peasy lemon squeezy, isn't it? Go and just press that button and join, and there you go, you're in. But when you look at it sometimes from the outside, it doesn't all make that much sense, does it? So it's about having that smooth transition. Now we've got Adele. You were going to say something first, so you go first.
Exactly. So what it does. So if you think you had a Facebook group of 1,000, and you're going to move across, and it is the rule even to come into the club, the people that don't come across probably shouldn't have been in your group in the first place. So for me, I think it's quality over quantity. And when I took my group over, I did a few how-to videos. And, you know, I explained why I'm doing this, brought them into the journey. Do you know what, Sean? It was no different if I was putting in one of my HR projects in a very corporate world. You've got to take people through the change curve. And yeah. I explained why. I took them across. But what I also do, I also know how long it takes to build up a habit. Eugenie's got an amazing thing. You can just flip to email all users. And on a Friday, I could tell who had logged on, when, and the last time. I'd give them a gentle nudge. Come on, guys, this is what we're doing. Because you've got to remember, it takes a while to build a habit. And then I've said, look, can you put a notification on your phone at 9 o'clock every morning? Because I go in and give you the top tip of the day, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I just set expectations. And now they've got the reminder on their phone. Oh, Adele, I forgot. Right, they set a reminder. And just gently nudge. And I would say I've fully launched them in November. And now I can jump on and see there's traction. So just explain the why.
So explain the why and sort of have a clear path and a plan. Laura.
I was going to say, I think sort of over more very recent times, people's trust in the social media platforms is going down. And I think, you know, where it was really big a couple of years ago, you know, I know people, you know, friends of mine who have completely switched off things like Facebook. So I think, you know, now is the time that we're going to be seeing more things like Eugenie, where the actual, you know, those who have you know, information on it, groups on it, are just going to feel more in control, and those people that are members are actually going to feel safer with their content because of, you know, all the press that we, you know, the bad press that we read really about what happens with our data on particularly things like Facebook and other social media platforms. So I think we're at a changing sort of stage now where other things are going to sort of supersede.
And I also see things like people who are getting fed up with some of the negativity, some of the other comments, because you don't just control your, you know, we don't control Facebook, do we? We go into a group, but it's very rare that you actually just hop into that group and don't see anything else around it. You know, along the way, you are going to see other people and other things and other comments if you're actually interacting on that platform.
If I may jump in just quickly, also, if it still worked, you know, we could still use it as a great tool. It doesn't work as well as it used to either, even from a purely objective point of view. Four or five years ago, you could have set up a group, got lots of people in it, got a lot of them to funnel through to a paid, you know, a paid program or membership. And, you know, I did a demo for a new client yesterday, and they're playing with the model of a higher tier price point for membership or a very low tiered with lots of people. You need a lot of people following you for the low tier membership pricing to work, to get them to convert. And you used to be able to do that in Facebook. I think people are just starting to recognize that, you know, it's, they're not getting the visibility. It doesn't work. But and I'm hoping that we start falling out of that trap and putting so much time and energy into something that actually doesn't even work that well anymore.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Now, I've totally forgotten what I was going to ask. Oh, that's it. I know what I was going to ask. So one of the things that Susan has said, and I think we can't stress this enough, is that making this work is about strategy and not technology. So we're using digital. This is about digital transformation. It's about using the digital platforms. But in actual fact, we don't need to know about the technology. What we need to know is the strategy to actually make that community and that group work. One of the things I was going to ask is, I think, you know, how do you deal with, so this is possibly for both of you, but also, I mean, Jackie, you know, our other co-hosts are going to have some input to this as well. Not everything's always lovely and flowery, is it? You set up a community. You want your community to be really supportive of everybody in the group. You want people to come out of it feeling inspired, empowered. And if they've asked for help, you hope that what they're going to get back is something sort of quite positive. But what do you do if you inadvertently let somebody in who, let's say, is really not very nice? Who may be in a bad space themselves, because I think my personal belief is that when people are being really unpleasant, it's their own hurt, it's stuff that they're dealing with. But let's just say somebody's in that space and they're causing distress to other people by their unpleasant, hurtful comments. What do you do? What do you do about them?
You chop them off at the knees.
Yeah, okay. At the moment we can't get within slapping range.
I've had that situation when we were, you know, in person type meetings. I had two people, one who had a drink problem and another one who was a little bit not so careful about her personal hygiene. And I had to have that conversation with them, and one of them got particularly upset about it. But then actually what I found was that they actually could work together really well and supported each other, because the lady with the drink problem was pristine.
I'm sorry.
And the other one, they just worked together really well and helped each other.
That's
along
just
the way.
The universe working, isn't it?
I know. I had to have that conversation in the first, you know, I had to put my big girl pants on and have that conversation.
Adele, you're running a community.
Yeah. So to be honest, at the moment, Sian, I have a one-to-one with everybody before they come into the community.
Okay.
Because it's got to be a fit. It's got to be a fit for me and it's got to be a fit for them. And I set the expectation. But I did actually bring somebody in at the beginning, and expectations weren't quite where they needed to be. So I had a conversation with that person and said, you know, and also, you know, it's no different when I was in HR, I had a leavers survey. I wanted to know. So we had a discussion and we had a leavers and we had a discussion and it was fine. So we decided that the club wasn't for them and they left. So, and it was great learning for me and it was great learning for that person and what I've been able to do. But I also survey the guys on a regular basis as well. So I say to them, you know, it's important. And I call it the voice of the club. It's not my club, it's our club. So I ask them what they want, etc. Yeah. So I get lots and lots of feedback. So I do a survey as well.
Okay, I love that idea. So you involve everybody, but you haven't. So if somebody isn't in the right place, shall we say, or isn't in the right space, you don't just chuck them out, cut them off.
We have a conversation.
you have a conversation with them, because you want people to leave. You know, if people are leaving and they're moving on to something else, then that's okay, and you want them to leave in the best possible way. But I guess there are going to be times when, if you have, say, a larger community and you're not being as selective, maybe, as Adele is, because she's working one-to-one with people, that you are going to have to take measures.
Yeah, and in as with sort of Facebook, with Eugenie, you can quickly take a comment down or block somebody straight away and to have a conversation. So, you know, because I do watch them, but I'm also, Sean, I'm at the point where I'm going to need to bring in a community manager to help and work alongside
me. Yeah.
I'm getting to that point. But Eugenie allows me to take down things very quickly if I need to, or pull a comment, or suspend somebody immediately if I need to, and have a chat.
And what you've just said there about bringing in a community manager, also, I just wanted to go back onto the scaling side of things, because I think that was so important what you said, Susan, about it's not just about where you are now. So you may have 100 people in a group, say, for instance, and you think, well, okay, we can run that on WhatsApp, and off you go. But where do you want your community to grow, to go? What are your objectives? If it's a charitable community, it could be going in one direction. If you want to monetize that community, if it's something that people are going to be paid to be a part of, how many people realistically do you need? And if you're going to have 10,000 people in that community, are you actually going to be able to run it on WhatsApp? No, I think you'll probably be pushing it actually at 100 on WhatsApp. So what is the capacity of your platform to actually grow, and to get your vision in place before you get started?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the one thing I was going to mention as well is community management. I think it's moderation in the early days when it's just you. You have to be very involved and very much watching everything. I had a community once where someone asked for help the first time, because what generally happens when you set up a new community is you get all the content in there, you invite your people, and then it's crickets. Nobody actually talks in the early days, right? You don't get those unless you get ambassadors and you do beta and you kind of get that buy-in from people. But we had this community where it launched and someone asked a question and no one responded, but not even the moderator. And I think that's where the person, you know, your community has to be your baby until you can then bring on, you know, proper people who can manage your community and really help you grow it. But from a scale, I mean, WhatsApp, oh, don't get me started on WhatsApp. I have a love-hate relationship with WhatsApp. I think it's amazing for family groups. And well, actually, we had to do a whole process of telling our parents of what they're allowed to put into our family WhatsApp group.
I love it.
Or, you know, it was just because you have these groups where all the aunties are putting in the same thing into the family WhatsApp group. And I'm just like, I can't
say, oh, that's lovely again.
Yeah, or if you're an in-law group, I'm sure my in-laws are not watching, but if you're in a group, you can't leave the group. You can't be that girl, right?
I could. I was that girl. I could be.
It's like, you know, especially in Indian families, you don't do that. But, you know, it's a great tool. It's very immediate. But some people don't like the immediacy as well. They don't want to have to respond right away. They don't want to have all of that
Okay, shall I tell you what I'm getting out of this, listening to everybody, all right, is that you can't, is that a well-run community needs a vision. You need to know where it's going, but it also needs rules and strategy. And there have to be rules in place and people have to understand those rules. What's expected of them? And as a community manager, so that could be you, it could be that you've brought in other people, what's expected of those and what will happen if those rules are broken? Mm-hmm. And we don't like to think, I think, sometimes in terms of rules on things like that. But I can't see that there's actually any other way of doing it. It's about expectations, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think people not only honour that, but they also appreciate it,
because
then they know exactly what's what,
and it protects them as well. Listen, let's have a very, very quick fire round. So first of all, I want to Adele and Susan, can you tell how people can get hold of you? So let's go Susan first. How can people contact you if they're interested in Eugenie and the community platform?
So you can check out our website. It's www.eugenie.io. There's no E in there. You can also email me at the same, susan@eugenie.io, or connect with me on LinkedIn.
Perfect. Adele, how can people get hold of you if they're interested in the sort of your Women in Business Midlife Club?
Go straight to my website, which is www.executivemidlife.coach.
Right then, thank you very much for that, folks. Let us now very quickly round the table. So top tips for starting a community. Susan.
You took the words out of my mouth earlier. Strategy, not tech. The tech can always, you can make the tech you need to work based on budget. But if you don't know where, what you want the community to do and where you want it to go, you will fail. And I think it's also looking in that strategy of who your potential members are and really understanding them.
Perfect. Jackie.
Listening to what people want and make those connections and go from there.
Adele.
Clear purpose.
Sorry, say that again.
A clear purpose.
A clear purpose. Clear. Laura.
I just think the, sort of the duty of care, remembering to look after and make sure that, you know, there aren't any bad eggs upsetting your community. So, yeah.
I am actually going to go with decide the look and feel and put the rules in place around that. You know, what do you want somebody to feel when they come into your community? What do you want them to get? And then put a structure and rules around that to do the best that you can to make that happen. Okay, let's start on start. Jackie, go on.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I haven't had a chance to properly look at the website as yet, but is there an indication of price structure there?
For Eugenie?
Yes, sorry.
Yeah, so we have three options. We have a web-only option, which is £35 a month, plus VAT for 500 users. If you need more users than that, we can talk offline. If you want our app, so think it's like Facebook, you download Eugenie and join a private community, so you have the app version, it's £65 a month. And if you want the white label, i.e. we build you your own version of Eugenie, it's a bit more expensive. So it's £3,000 to set up and £250 a month to maintain.
Okay, folks, very quickly, round the table, startup tips. So who should we start with? We're going to start with Adele. Starting a business, your top tip.
Oh, do you know what? Just make sure you've got a very clear plan. And again, don't just think about startup, think about phase two and scaling.
Oh, lovely. Have a plan. Susan, startup story. Startup tips, sorry.
Know your numbers from day one. Really know your numbers.
Really know your numbers. We've got time to go to Laura and Jackie. Laura first. Start.
Understand who your market is, your community. So I had a community business and I looked into that and tapped into it. So yeah.
Jackie.
Make sure that your domain name and you understand what a domain name and its value is.
Mine is, where is it going and how big is it going to get? And are you ready for that? Okay, folks, this has been the Women in Business Radio Show. We will be back next week. Thank you to our lovely guest co-host. We have Laura Lawrence from Laura Lawrence Marketing. We have Adele Martin from the Women in Business Executive Midlife Club. We've got Susan Gabani, founder of Eugenie, and we've got Jackie Groundsall, founder and organiser and runner of 1230, the Women's Company. I'm Sean Murphy. We will see you next week. Thank you very much, everybody. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Tune in next week to the Women in Business Radio Show for more stories, ideas, and inspiration to help you grow your business.